Kurt Galov, and Kurt, enjoy.
Well, thanks for the introduction, and thanks for organizing this dev room. It is a pleasure and an honor to to be the first speaker here. When I saw the title of the dev room, I'm trying to now gain a sticker by saying it correctly, Building Europe's Digital Public Infrastructure.
Public digital infrastructure.
Really? Okay, I missed. I think the, we use a lot the abbreviation DPI, Digital Public Infrastructure, and that's also why. Okay, I also have it like this in my title. Actually, and I wanted to provoke you a bit by saying, well, no, it's not just for Europe. It's really for everybody, a global open source community building things for the world. But yes, we need it really badly in Europe right now. I mean, there's no doubt. I will introduce myself real quick. Been doing open source for all of my professional life. Linux kernel was actually sort of starting point lots of years ago. Spent many years at SUSE. And then since 15 years roughly, I've been building open source clouds. I've been doing this for Deutsche Telekom. I've also, was like the chief architect for the Open Telecom Cloud. And the last 5 years, more than actually 6 years now, Sovereign Cloud Stack, which is like an initiative which I'll talk about a bit, so I'll not go into that. And I have done this for the Open Source Business Alliance, where we had a funded project. I'm doing this now within my own company, which is S7N. And I'll share a bit some of the work we're doing to kind of bring knowledge on technology into various countries of the world. That's the title of my talk. And some of that I've done together with Carsten Samaschke. That's why you see his face on the slide as well. And I guess no one of you has been in Paris at the Open Info Summit at our session, because if you would, you might be a bit disappointed. I think like 50% or so of the content you would have already seen. But I have some updates also for those that have been there. I guess that's not affecting a lot of you. And all of the work we've done was possible by support we have from various organizations. The German government has been supporting our project when it was a supported project. We did the project within the OSBA, and the trainings we do and the work we do together with the GovStack project, which has funding from ITU, also the German government, GIZ. And we have some nice work we do together with the United Nations. Maybe the context, and it is something that, well, we cannot ignore the fact that the world is getting like a more difficult place to be in, and a lot of us, I mean, enjoy the freedoms we have in our liberal democratic systems where we live in, where we have, at least in Europe, we have this privilege still, and we may need to defend it in many, many different ways. Obviously, as an IT person, I hope that in our IT space, we can contribute like the pieces that we can do. We have strong dependencies in the way we do IT in most European countries, strong dependencies on typically US platforms. And I mean, Ms. von der Leyen says it really clearly, those are dependencies which can be weaponized against us, and we need to expect that to happen. I guess we try to be optimistic on these questions for too long, and I guess it's become obvious we can no longer do that. So there is a clear understanding that openness and creating digital public goods is something that actually helps all of the people in the world. We have like this nice statements from the OSPOS for Good conference 2024 in New York, where the UN Secretary Envoy really said openness, of course, but there's democratization. So he really makes that connection from we build open technology that allows access to technology, and that helps actually with stabilizing or building democratic cultures. And for achieving that, we need to foster this co-creation and remove barriers between governments and citizens. So he's kind of very, very officially saying, well, this is how we do this. Okay, I hope the slides will be on the video later on. We have been working with the GovStack initiative. The charter that initiative has is to build, well, no, sorry, to define specifications for building blocks. Building blocks that countries, that governments can use to provide services for their citizens. And if you think about what that could be, there are different layers, like there's middleware in there with API gateway. There's basic blocks that everybody needs, like e-learning or a marketplace workflows. There's a payment module. There's user management modules. But there's also like foundational blocks. And one of the blocks that has been defined and added there also is a cloud infrastructure building block, where there's like a specification for how you build open cloud infrastructure. And we have had the privilege to work with that project and contribute to that effort. Right now, I mean, this is pretty advanced. The GovStack initiative has started this a couple of years ago already. We currently see other initiatives also where stacks are being defined, and I do hope, and I still try to foster some collaboration between those initiatives. Anybody aware what those logos on the right-hand side mean? Yeah, yeah, yeah. So this is Deutschland stack, and this is the Euro stack. The second one, Euro stack. That's not the public sector initiative, but the industry initiative from Christina Kaffara and others. And they're also trying to kind of bring the European industry together to build something. I do hope, and I guess open source does allow and make that easy, that we can foster that collaboration. So we don't need to do the work twice and three times in the end up with too much fragmentation. And we've had a discussion yesterday that fragmentation is not necessarily a bad thing, but if you fragment too much, you do not, well, it's too wasteful. We don't have the bandwidth to like build 20 great stacks. If there's like two or three or four, or maybe we do many, but they collaborate, and so we don't do the work many, many times. And that's also, I mean, one of the ideas behind the Sovereign Cloud Stack project. A bit more on the building blocks that GovStack has. So the logic is it doesn't create software modules, but it creates specifications. Basically saying, well, this is how the functionality that a specific module should be having, and these are the interfaces. Typically, well, REST interfaces, if you talk about APIs. And then based on these specifications, based on these interfaces, vendors can implement modules and then actually provide them within the GovStack marketplace, GovMarket. And there's then also a methodology that the compatibility with all the requirements is being tested, and you need to kind of pass all the mandatory requirements to be listed in the marketplace. And the idea is that for each of the building blocks, there are partners that do implement those solutions. And then those modules together actually can be used to provide services. And there is some collaboration with the United Nations and to actually provide infrastructure and to have at least a demo environment up and running so countries can see that. And then, of course, countries can decide whether they want to build like their own cloud infrastructure. They can host those services also with the hyperscalers, but a lot of actually countries do not want to do that. Specifically in Africa, there's some sensitivity around not feeling like being a colony of other countries. So they're rather careful not to run into dependencies from China or from the United States. So they have a significant interest into having control over the infrastructure. And that's also the reason why the Sovereign Cloud Stack initiative that we have been building for a few years was chosen like as a implementation there that's being used. Just to kind of show the slide how this came together, because when we saw this GovStack project, they were kind of asking, well, actually, we want participation, but you need to kind of believe in the same. Specifications in public, we develop software in public as open source under open science licenses with an open development model. We create public documentation, and we do automation and documentation public. We share this.
I think they are trying to fix that your slides are also visible for the stream, just as an explanation for the audience.
Yeah, the slides are not currently visible.
Yeah. All right. I will just continue, I guess. I mean, at least then people that have made it into this room have the reward of being here early enough, which is hard enough at first step. And that kind of gives me, like, quickly going into what we did in the Sovereign Cloud Stack project. So the ability to actually have control over your infrastructure is what was driving the initiative. And when we started, digital sovereignty was not like a topic that everybody was trying to work towards. That was not yet like a famous word. And also it was not abused as much in marketing as it is these days. But when we actually started to see that this is the case, that is happening now, that people talk about digital sovereignty without really having a clear understanding what they mean, we took the time to kind of write down what we think we want to achieve with it. And we have kind of published about this in the cloud report, and also in a Datenschutz und Datensicherheit, a German, almost scientific journal, actually, to kind of define this. And there's we came up with like four dimensions. And that's something that actually came up from discussions with people we talked to. So we talked to users and asked them, well, what is it you want to achieve to feel sovereign? Because sovereignty is something that a user of technology has, not the technology. It's not a property of the technology, it's actually a property of the user of technology. And then, of course, that's the obvious one, data sovereignty. People want to have control over their data, where it's stored, how it's stored, who can access it, who has metadata access. That's straightforward. I think most people that claim to be sovereign actually have some mechanisms to ensure that. Maybe you don't believe all of them, but at least that's what most people aspire to. Provider switching. So I heard very often that users, they want to have choice. If I have like only one provider, that's not very helpful. And then saying, well, okay, but yeah, there are several hyperscalers, so I have choice. It's not really a good choice, because the choice is also, once you have taken, you've chosen one, and maybe you later on still want to switch. So having the ability to switch out to use a different provider, or maybe combine two of them together, is what's really making this more useful. Technological sovereignty is about the ability to really look into technology, change it, adapt it to your needs, enhance it, create innovation actually on the technology, something that you can do with open source, obviously. That's, I guess, what's connecting all of us here. And then there's a realization that building infrastructure is not easy. Operating it in a way that it works really reliably and you can base your production upon it is harder than building it initially. So making sure we actually also use what we learned from open source, where we collaborate in development. Let's see whether we can also actually create some ways of sharing knowledge, of sharing experience, good and bad experience. The good ones are more easy to share than the bad ones, I guess. How we operate those things. And that actually provides then an ability also for smaller organizations that may not have like a ton of great experts to run infrastructure to be successful. And that That's what we're trying to do there. And the way we do it is rather straightforward. So for providing the provider switch capability, we have certifiable standards. Those are really technical standards defining how the platform behaves, what the interfaces are. So if you move from one platform to another, you find the same behavior, the same interfaces, the same APIs, and you don't need to rewrite all your automation or do all the testing again. The second piece is really the software piece. So we have an open source ecosystem around us that provides implementation for those standards, and they actually can be put together, and we have a number of partners that run production public clouds and also some private clouds on that. And then operational knowledge is really making sure we specifically put an effort into building documentation and finding it and making it findable and making it easily accessible, specifically around operations, because that's where typically the largest gap is. And the vision then is, there was like an idea that we sometimes hear here when we said, well, in Europe we need more IT platforms, that yes, let's build this cloud Airbus. I think that was like a few years ago a rather common idea how we fix the problem. We don't think that we want to build a cloud Airbus. I think we should be more clever by having the standards. Actually, let's build a network of providers, and let's make sure users can easily switch or combine things from that network because they're compatible thanks to the standards. And that way, it's not like this centralized idea of providing competition to hyperscalers, but decentralized by having providers work together, share the same standards, and that way allowing customers to use all of them together. The standards are defined in an RFC-like process. We have like this on our documentation page. Those standards have a number, they have a version. There's, of course, a discussion process before we create a new version. So it goes from a draft standard to an approved standard. And then some of those can be combined into a certification scope, and a certification scope means that you fulfill those 20 standards, and that basically gives you like this interoperability on the virtualization layer, for example, logo, or interoperability at the container layer logo. Important, those standards are being monitored. So for each of the standards, there's a test. We have like a very small number of exceptions where we need to have some manual documents, but the baseline is still everything should be automatically tested and should be testable also by users. So you don't like need admin access to do those tests. They run every night, and we can monitor them in the compliance monitor. And you can basically see in the compatible EAS, that's the example here, some of the clouds that fulfill that. Also, some of our partners have been sloppy over the last days and failed them. they already have been informed they need to fix something. But also users can see this, actually. So, if you for some reason see, the cloud I'm using is no longer working the way so automation somehow fails, you could look there and see, maybe it's not your fault, maybe it's the provider's fault. Good. This is actually the architecture that we have implemented within the CloudStack specification. So you don't see any product names there. You don't see any technology names there. And it's a rather classical stack where you do like hardware management. You have a virtualization layer. You virtualize compute, storage, networking. And then on top of that, you can do container cluster management. The nice thing about this architecture for a public cloud where you need like multi-tenancy and you want like a very agile way of creating container clusters, that's the standard way of doing that, and we've done that, and it works well. And also part of the software stack is also that you have like the operational tooling in place and the identity and access management that allows you to federate. This is one of the things that I'm really proud of. So we're going back now to the GovStack context. We have been actually starting to work with the United Nations, the data center people, UNICC. They're currently building up an SCS environment that is used by the GovStack people, and maybe as important as the environment they built, we're building knowledge there, because UNICC has the ability to bring that knowledge into many countries in the world. And that brings me to like the knowledge skills building thing. Obviously, sovereignty means you know what you do. You know when you use technology, how to use it, and what it does for you. And so we have invested, and I have, beyond all of the documentation work that we've already done inside the SCS project, have also had the privilege that ITU actually paid for creating training material. So we have like 5 days course for advanced cloud computing. And there's like an 80-something page PDF. And unlike some other technologies or projects, we have published this under a Creative Commons license. So it can be used, reused, and that's the way it's meant to be. This is just summarizing how digital sovereignty and digital public goods belong together. I guess I'll jump over this so I have time for questions. Just want to report, we did actually go into some countries and did these cloud trainings, and that's also after that we kind of revised the training material quite significantly once more. The way we structured it is really we kind of explained something, and then we did really live work with like a mini cloud there and had everybody kind of try it out and learn it. And then only then, once we've been successful with everybody, jump to the next session. So this was a session in Kenya where we had people from Somalia, Kenya, and Djibouti that were participating. It was also funny because we did this in English and there was live translation into French, and then sometimes we tried to speak French with the participants, but it was also a fun experience. Worked well. I'll just jump to the last slide then. Slides, if you want to download them, you can get, but you can also get them from the FOSDEM page. I made this before I was before I was aware that, of course, the pre-talks also has it. I think we have 3 minutes for questions. Three. Are there any questions? Yes.
So you're talking about the specifications.
Yes.
How do you decide how prescriptive to be with the specification? Because the specification, you can be too general and then you get deviating implementations. But if you get too prescriptive, then no one implements them properly because they're too detailed. So how do you get the balance right?
Yeah. Okay. So the question was how to balance like being too strict, too restrictive with specifications, and being too general, so it doesn't have enough meaning and clarity anymore. So we did one thing. We did develop the specifications together with the reference implementation. So we know that the specification can be implemented, they are relevant, and it works. That has one big downside. There's a risk that your reference implementation in the end will be the only one that implements this. So we kind of specifically reached out to other cloud providers that use different set of technologies and thought, okay, do we have something that those would not be able to implement? And I'm glad to report there's like two for the virtualization layer, which was the first one we did. We have now two independent implementations of that also fulfill the criteria. So I think we were successful with doing that. But it is something you need to balance. I mean, the question I think is spot on. Oh, sorry. Are you kind of keeping track who asks first? Okay. Okay. Then that's. Thanks.
Do you have an impact metric? I mean, how many active users, the numbers of servers that implement the stack? Do you follow such a metric?
So the question is whether we track like the success by having users or servers counted. So I can report we have six public cloud providers that are using the technology. The largest one running 4 regions with, a large 2-digit number of hosts. and also like significant projects running on that. So we have like one project that we like to talk about, which is the Bayern Cloud Schule project.
And with that, I would like to ask for a hand up. Thanks a lot, Kurt.
Thank you.